Welcome to another episode of Crossing Soccer Borders, a podcast focused on the growth of CONCACAF soccer, part of the DynamoTheory.com network. My name is Rudy, and we have no Rodrigo today, but we are joined by former professional soccer player and Houston area Rays, Cyprian Hedrick. Cip, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us today. How are you?
Man, Rudy, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So Cip is someone that I know way back when. We used to play some FIFA, get skunk every now and then. It's so good to see you. Yeah. You remember, man.
Yeah, of course.
I think the first time I ever heard of you, Cip, was Clearbrook, man. Clearbrook days. Playing in Parent Land, you killed us. I think you played striker that time. But hey, before we get started in talking about your pro career, I just want to start from the very beginning of Cyprian's story. And born in Cameroon, right? Rich soccer country with players such as Rigobert Song and Samuel Eto'o. How's life in Cameroon for young Cyprian? And, you know, how did your family migrate to the States, man?
Yeah, man. Like you mentioned, I started out in Cameroon. I was born there. And, you know, I lived there till I was 9. And my stepdad was actually working there. And he met my mom. They fell in love and they got married. And so at 9 years old, left everybody I knew and loved and came here to the United States for a better life and an opportunity to make something of myself. So that's how I got here. And obviously, you know, growing up, that's what you're playing. You know, everybody plays soccer. So, you know, you do your chores, you do your schoolwork, and then you go play, you know, and then you come back, you know, shower, eat, go to sleep. And then it's just the same thing on repeat. So the game's always been in my blood. It's been part of my culture. You know, my mom, my relatives, I mean, we all love the game religiously. So I think it was a given that we all played, obviously. So yeah, moving here, I moved to Houston when I was 9, which was a big culture change and a culture shock, because I didn't speak the language. I didn't read, I didn't write English. So I had to learn, you know, English, how to read it, how to write everything, because my native language is French. That's the first language I knew. So that was difficult, you know. I had to navigate that, learn a new language, learn everything, get adjusted to a new culture. And that was a little difficult, but, you know, thanks to sports and especially soccer, you know, it was able to help me get acclimated and start making friends and being a part of, you know, my environment. And I think through that, that's how I started learning English a little better. You know, I was more motivated to want to be around and interact with people. And so I think once I kind of opened up, you know, and my personality started showing, then I started making friends through soccer, especially. Obviously, I played other sports, basketball and football and stuff for fun. But soccer was the one sport, you know, the one thing that always kind of stood out and the thing that I was excelled in. So it made sense that I naturally gravitated towards that. But, you know, my youth playing days, you know, I started out with the Friendswood Blaze, a little team in Friendswood. We played there. That was my first organized team ever. We had a blast, man. My best friend, Nick, even till now, he's the godfather of my kids. I'm really close to him. But we started off from there. We went to Pumas, which was the local. We went and we played there. And playing with them for, you know, I think 3 or 4 years. And so from there, you know, breaking off.
I can hear you.
There I went to, they were called the Texas Heat then. I think now they're the Texans. So my last, you know, year of soccer was played there. And also, as you mentioned, Brook High School. So I played up top, you know, scored a couple of goals, had some good games and had a great time. I know nowadays high school soccer isn't something that people take too seriously. But I know we did.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted our best players, you know, Josh Adams, Christian Montoya, Nick. I mean, we had really, really good players. And we took high school seriously. So, you know, now to see how high school is now, how it used to be, I don't understand. It makes me scratch my head. But yeah, man, I had a great, great opportunity to go down the street and play San Jack. Yeah. For David Santa Esteban.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, how was I know Rodrigo also was able to play with the same coach.
Yeah,
you know, program so good at San Jack. It's gone now.
Yeah,
but how was that experience, man? With I know the guy was a very hard coach.
Yeah, he was.
You know, very tough love type of guy.
Yeah,
but I mean, he showed it. You know, the way that his teams were portrayed in the field. So, what did you feel you learned in your 2 years there?
Yeah, no, I learned a lot, man. And the most important thing was the value of your first touch. you know, there were many times, you know, I came in and I thought, you know, I'm coming from high school. I have a bunch of goals. I'm going to play striker. And he was very upfront, and he was like, look, you know, I think you're a good player, but you're not going to play over these players that are here at your position. So you can either take a rest your year and, you know, see what else you can do, where else you can fit in, where else you can play, and how you can help the team. But really, that's all I have to offer you right now. And so, you know,
so is that when
that was a bit of a
to from
yeah from that's when I started defense? Yeah, no, I mean, even my club team, I played, you know, I played some, you know, that's what I played most of the time. High school, I played up top. I was able to play both at some different teams, and so I was always defensive minded. So I don't think that transition, I think it was a very easy transition, just because naturally the roles was, my job was to break up the ball and give it to my attacking and cover a lot of ground. And And so it's no different than playing defense. So that was the first time for me where a coach sat me down and was like, listen, this part isn't going to happen, but let's see what else you can do. Mm-hmm. And so with those traits and those the ability to play different places, and the first and foremost, me being hungry enough and being willing to play, because at the end of the day, if you're a footballer, you want to be on the field. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're a position you love or a position you don't know,
right,
but not being on the field. So for me, it was easy because to contribute. So when he asked me to center mid, right back, some center back, that was the first time I was like, okay, you know, I can kind of duff. Maybe it's not perfect, but I'm learning and I'm growing. So, but that was the one thing I learned from that culture, especially, man, really good players. And if you were not good, you stood out.
Yeah.
If your touch was bad, you stood out, because everybody's touch was good. Everybody played. You know, we had very skillful players representing different nationalities, Guatemala, Jamaica. I mean, man, we had really, really talented players. So in order to be in that environment and to earn the respect of those players, you can't be the person that's messing up every time you guys are doing, you know, possession, you know, playing a small sided game or whatever. You stick out. So for me, that was one of the first times that I was in an environment like that where first touch and how you take care of the ball is extremely important. And so, yeah, man, that was the one thing that I took that I carried with me to Coastal Carolina and into my professional days.
And I was going to ask you, I know recently whenever we were chatting, you mentioned how your mom had passed away when you were younger. Did you ever expect to play college soccer, you know, when honestly, you were before that, like when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was kind of lost when she passed away. I know she always wanted me to go to college and get a degree. And I think that's every African parent, not just mine. I think that's every African parent, you know, but she'd always supported me with soccer because she knew that's something that I excelled in. And that's something I was passionate about and I love. So it's funny, quick little story. She actually made me quit playing basketball in high school so I can play soccer, because my freshman year, I didn't try out for the soccer team and I promised I would, but I was playing basketball and they kind of like, you know, they're kind of at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so I chose to play basketball and she went to go watch me play a game and I didn't play at all. And so, after that, she was like, yeah, stop wasting your time playing all these other sports, you know, stick to soccer, you know, it's going to take you place in life and, you know, just focus on one thing. So, but her passing away obviously was very difficult for me. Yeah. And, my plan was to always go to college and to always play. And so, you know, now instead of her being there and physically being able to push me along, I was doing it to honor her as well. Cause I know she's staring down at me and, if she was there, that's what she want for me. And obviously it's what I want for myself as well. But, just to have a little extra motivation to keep pushing, when times are hard, especially in college, it's not easy. I always had a little extra motivation knowing that she was watching me. So it was, something that kind of motivated me to keep pushing on.
And see, I know that, you know, again, when we met, we were probably like 18. And
yeah,
from very early on, you can tell that you had like leadership skills and, you know, you were always made the captain. How did that go once, you know, obviously San Jacinto College is in Houston, close to Friendswood. But whenever you made that jump to Coastal Carolina, you know, what helped you kind of become that leadership and just kind of take that role?
I mean, I think part of it is the fact that I'm a pretty open person and I'm always willing to adapt. I never want to be the kind of person that's giving himself excuses as to why you're not able to do something. I like to meet challenges head on. And so I think being in a place like St. Jack, where I came in thinking, man, I'm the guy, you know, I came out for high school, I scored all these goals. It humbled me, you know, it humbled me. And it was a very tough thing to go to practice every day, do rookie duties and freshman duties, all these things, and then never play. And to just sit on the outside and watch people play for a whole year. That was hard, but that was very humbling. And I think at that point, it was something that I needed just to kind of let me know, hey, listen, you're good, but there's people out there working, getting better every day. So instead of being content with just being, you know, good here, keep pushing yourself because there's always someone working home and getting better. And so all those things I was able to take with me to Coastal Carolina. And it's what, and like you mentioned, it's kind of part of my personality. I like to make sure I'm taking care of my own business, but I like to help people around me because, you know, I don't want to be the person at the top of the hill by myself, you know, eating everything amazing while everybody's down. No, I'm either going to suffer with my teammates or I'm going to help boost you and motivate you and you know, bring you along so we can all do it together. And that's just how I've been. That's just been my theme. And so I think all those things were, you know, all those little things help, you know, contribute to my ability to be vocal and also physically doing it, do the work because I like to lead by example. I feel like that's the best form of leadership. Not someone who's going to say a bunch of stuff and is doing something different, but someone who's physically going to do it and lead by example. So when you tell the young guys, hey, listen, we need to try to do this. They're not looking at you like, man, you never stay after practice. You never show up early. Why should we listen to you? You know? So I think that's something that I've always had within me. And when I got in environments like that, when I really expressed myself, those dynamics came out. You know, I was able to, fortunate to have a couple of coaches that could see them and allow them. So.
Yeah. And so obviously during that time you played with Friends with Fuego. I'm thinking they don't exist anymore, but yeah,
Fresno Fuego.
But you know, obviously you had a very successful college career, you know, playing at St. Jack, playing at Coastal Carolina. You may hear me come in and out, but I can hear you fine. It says recording.
Yeah. No, you're good.
Yeah. And so then, you know, in 2012, you were, I mean, I still remember, man, you were selected 30th overall by Sporting KC. I was like, I couldn't believe that you were there. And it was awesome just to be like, hey, man, congrats.
Yeah.
But how's that draft experience for you like? You know, like I know obviously having your mom not there probably hard, but overall the experience of just being drafted and kind of like the realization of being professional, obviously compared to the rest of the world is like very different, right? Like other places, you start very young, you're probably 16 and you become pro. There's a different path that the U.S. kind of brings. But how was that for you, man?
Right, man. It was unexpected, if I'm being honest. I was never invited to the combine, MLS combine. I wasn't, you know, top 10 in the country. And, you know, I went to a small D1 school, man, in South Carolina. I'm Forest and UNC. Like, those are the attractor, typically speaking, those are the school coaches go look at because, you know, those programs are usually ran, style of play is usually really good. And so God working in my corner, man. My work was always honest. I always worked my butt off. And I always wanted the opportunity. I just wasn't sure how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so, and when I got done, obviously had ambition to play college. I mean, a professional. And so my college coach helped me put me in touch with a guy who was an agent, David, great dude, worked really hard for me. And so he went to the combine and, you know, I spoke to people about me and showed people my video and stuff that I did. And, I think obviously Sporting saw it, but I actually found out much later on that they actually had someone come watch me at Coastal Carolina, a game. And so I didn't, it could have been a game I played bad. It could have been a game I played good. That's why I tell young kids, you know who's watching.
Yeah, for sure.
It can be a championship. It can be an exhibition. Play your hardest and leave it on the field. And so I guess what I did was enough for them to say, hey, you know what? We want to draft this guy. And so I was sitting home actually in Friendswood and I was watching it on my computer because I didn't think I was going to get drafted. I mean, I wasn't invited. So, you know, typically you would select all the people that were invited first.
Right.
I was selected 30th overall. There's no way I should be selected over people who were there who got evaluated.
Right.
That makes no sense. So, again, like I said, I think that's just a testament of God working in my corner and working in my life and just opening a door for me to
who called to go you, make by an the way? Was it Peter Vermees or someone like that? Or
yeah, I talked to Peter. I talked to Peter on the phone, and I was I was like, what? I can't believe this is happening right now. I was literally on my way out for a run because the first round went by and I'm like, you know, Matt Hedges is getting drafted, all these guys. And I go for a run. And as I started walking out the door, my TV, computer, something. So I'm thinking, okay. And I literally missed myself getting drafted. I turned it on after I had just gotten drafted. So I missed it completely.
Oh, that's
But just the amount of like phone calls and text messages, and my phone blew up, man. I was overwhelmed, to be honest. I'm a very, I don't want to say quiet, because I'm not quiet, but I'm not a super attention grabber.
I think you're very private, attention, you know? Sure.
Yeah. You know, like if you know me, I interact. I'm good. I'm a people person, but I'm not going to go like out of my way to have people look at me.
Yeah, for sure.
That's not the kind of person I am. So for so many people to be hitting me up, wanting interviews and stuff, I was like very overwhelmed. And it was an amazing experience. And just to see that the door is finally open, you know, because people have this misconception that you get drafted, you're a pro. No, you still got to go earn, you know, unless you're top 10 or something, your contract guaranteed, you got to go earn a contract. And so, man, I was just very grateful that I got the opportunity. Dream of reality.
So you were with Kansas City like a season, right?
Season.
Did you get to play on like preseason matches or anything like that? I don't know if you suited up for like an MLS game or not, but
no, I never made my debut. But I did play some preseason games in Orlando when I went to Florida, and even a couple of MLS reserve games when the MLS reserve was a thing. But besides that, you know, I wasn't able to do much else because I broke my leg 2 months into the season. So the preseason, 2 months in, you know, I to a tackle and I was out, you know, until like 2 months was my, this is what I got at. You're worth investing in, sure. And I'm able.
Obviously you will deal with that setback of an injury.
But
as a rookie, that's definitely tough when you didn't get to show off all your skills, right?
Right. No, it was cool for sure. Man, the best version of me was not seen because, again, one, I'm young. Two, you know, I'm coming from a program where, you know, we played a certain way. We had an English coach who was, you know, we liked to get in people's faces. We were very physical. And, you know, go from that to being in a system where you're recovering on more time. And when I got hurt, we're like this.
Yeah.
And I figured things out. Not too much, you know, for me is that I was low. And so, yeah.
But I mean, even with the time there, I mean, some of us wish we could even get that opportunity. Like you said, God was on your corner. Really cool experience. But I mean, you went and had like a very nice career with plenty of USL championship teams. Was it Phoenix FC, which I guess is Phoenix Rising now? Oklahoma City Energy, San Antonio FC, and FC Tulsa. How was that experience, I guess, playing for, if you want to start, I know Oklahoma City Energy was probably one of the ones that you played the most with.
Yeah.
And, you know, how was that experience playing with them? I think at the time you joined them, they're a pretty new team, if I'm not mistaken.
They were neat, man. Kansas City, you know, doing rehab and trying to get back on my feet to Phoenix. That was a cool experience because I got to play, you know, after being, I played game in and game out. Right. And that year was more for me to prove to myself that, man, I can still do this. Right. You know, physically, I'm okay. I'm back to my normal self. And so didn't have much success that year. But for me, physically, it was a win because I got to prove to myself that I can still do it and I can still do it at a very strong level. And so, you know, from there, we went to Oklahoma City. And the coach of Oklahoma City at the time I found out was my captain of Sporting, Jimmy Nielsen. Mm-hmm. And so when I found out that he was the head coach, I was like, man, I'm a free agent. I need to call him and see if we come to city. So it was a fairly easy who I was. Obviously, I was his teammate, so he knows, and me personality wise and within his locker room, what I would bring. And it was a kind of an easy, you know, easy deal to get. So that experience was really good. I spent 3 years and it was probably three of my best years playing. As far as what I was able to contribute, how I was able to contribute.
And it seemed like you were having a ton of fun as well, right?
Yeah, I have great teammates and lifelong friends and very near and dear to my heart. Obviously, I live in Tulsa now.
Yeah.
But, you know, anytime I'm back, man, I just see a bunch of people and loving and warming, welcoming to me and my family. So it was always a special part of my heart. That experience was really fun for me.
And whenever you played in San Antonio, that's probably the closest you got to play at home, right? Like for yeah. your family and,
yeah.
and friends from Houston area. How was that time there? I mean, I know at the time, I guess, San Antonio FC was trying to make a push to become an expansion team. Mm-hmm. It seems like they have a beautiful little stadium down there.
Yeah.
But how was that like for you? And also, you know, from the very beginning of whenever you started, you know, in 2012 to like when you retired, just kind of like a perspective. How much have you seen, like, especially the quote-unquote second division, you know, the USL Championship, evolve throughout the years?
Yeah, no, to answer the first question, I mean, my time in San Antonio was awesome. And the Spurs organization and just the facilities and had going on, what they have, amazing. It's a very professional environment, amazing. They're very supportive and stay longer. But, you know, for one reason or another, things that my check was over, it was time for me to move on. And so, you know, that was, but I was very grateful because I was even a part of a really good team there. I mean, obviously our defense, we had a pretty strong defense and we had depth, we had quality. And I think it was 2016, 17 maybe, beating streak. And I mean, it was crazy, but those teams were, then I learned a lot about myself, being in a position first choice. Because again, I had setbacks. I broke my leg again. And so I had to deal with that. And, you know, I kind of fell out of favor after I came back. And football, you know, people get an opportunity, they do well, it's theirs to lose.
Yeah.
You know, the team for the most part was pretty consistent. Still played some, but it was more from a reserve role. Mm-hmm. Same thing with my second year. And so it was great. To get a chance to be in my home state,
yeah,
you know, that was nice as well. Family, got to see family and, you know, and friends that came and watched all the time. So that experience was pretty unique, and it was good to finally get an opportunity to play home, or as close to home as possible at least.
Right.
But to touch on your point about quality, I mean, the league has grown so much. I mean, the number of teams, you know, the quality of players, you know, more international players coming in, MLS players come, you know, who want to play or whatever their reason is, you know, whether it's back close to home, where they, you know, grew up and stuff like that. Everybody has a lot of different reasons. But now you see the growth. Mm-hmm. And then now quality of play, man, it's grown tremendously. And now, you know, with the CBA and stuff, so like the player union and all these things. So you can tell that it's progressing and it's growing the right direction. It's just, you know, like anything else, it takes time, you know, to really get to the point where we're like, man, this is a very strong second division.
Right.
You know, I think there's still a lot of work to be done, but I think, you know, it's definitely on the right path right now.
Do you think that in the future, I mean, you know, 20, 30 years from now, if it continues, do you see it becoming like a relegation league like the MLS? And
man,
I mean, I know it's kind of like, you
that's
know,
a tough
funny
one
to talk about for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could say from my perspective, what I would like to see, I would like to see that happen.
Yeah.
But I think it would be kind of hard because, mm-hmm. you know, the amount of money that a team, let's say LA Galaxy gets relegated. Can you imagine LA Galaxy being relegated to division?
Yeah.
What that would do to their franchise. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, no, I know.
It makes it hard. It makes it hard to imagine. And they already have a, so they're going to play their own team
right.
to get promoted. You know right. what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or, you know, are they going to drop their second team to League One?
Yeah.
So they can be, you know what I'm saying? So it would make it hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
To,
and I
to
just think it's
that.
Funny because, you know, some people don't see it that way. Right. Like if you mm-hmm. think about if it's going to be beneficial when it comes to the competition, of course it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's a lot of things that are not there for
no.
the smaller teams or the big teams. So
or the bigger teams. Yeah.
yeah.
So it's I would love to eventually have it get to there. But I mean, yeah. with the numbers and how big the league is growing, you would think that's the only logical thing.
Right.
Because literally there's everything else from
right. yeah.
League One, League Two, like everything else under. It's there. It's just you need to have that proper bridge between MLS and everything else. And right now USL is there, but it's not connected.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. That's the only thing missing. That's the only thing missing.
And so you love the last team you played for was, well, it, when you started, I guess it was the Tulsa Roughnecks, and then became FC Tulsa. In November, you finally hanged up the cleats, how we say.
Yep.
Yeah. And but you stayed with FC Tulsa, right? So I guess my question would be, are you still involved with soccer or you have a new venture? But I think soccer's in your blood and it seems like you have a lot to go still, huh?
Yeah, no, it's I retired COVID, you know, mm-hmm. I have a big family, you know, four kids, My poor wife, who gets to deal with all of them by herself a lot. It was just time, man. Time for me to be around more, spend more time with my family and my kids, and to just venture. And so, you know, obviously I've always coached everywhere I played. And so I kind of knew, I had an idea that when I was done playing, that might be something I might be in.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a marketing degree. So, you know, I could definitely could have went to the business side of football. But, man, I need to be in or around the environment, you know, with the players, whether they're youth players or professional players. I feel like there's a lot I have to offer, and a lot that I bring to the table. And so, yeah, that's what I'm doing now. I'm coaching. I got the opportunity to join the staff and be a part of the staff as an assistant coach. So while I'm getting my licenses and I'm growing as a young coach myself, I'm learning from these guys, man, and just kind of seeing, you know, what they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it. And then I'm contributing my little bit and what my parts is. You know, right now I'm really involved with like the younger players and helping them, you know, help them develop, helping them get accustomed to what it is to be a professional, to be in a pro environment, what's expected day in and day out, as well as the other players, you know, the older players. There might be things I see that, man, I get some advice and, you know, those type of things. So it's pretty open about what I do within the organization for the team. So it's pretty neat because I'm fresh off. So the competitive juice is still flowing through my body, so it's coursing through my blood. So it's pretty neat to still be in the same environment while I'm learning and I'm growing myself. Because mainly good coaches, a lot of mentors, and I feel like you can make massive impact. There's a lot of coaches. There's a lot of really good coaches. So a lot of coaches who, you know, maybe aren't doing one to just be in a position where I can be a mentor and I can help give back and try to coach and guide the next generations of players and just kind of help them along their journey. So that's where my heart is, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. I spend a lot of my time doing that. And then obviously my daughter plays as well, so I get a chance to watch her play here and there.
Yeah, she seems like a big athlete, man. She's gonna follow your footsteps.
But she's definitely likes soccer. Obviously, she's but there's other things. She's a kid. So I'm like, you know what? Just get out of the house. Just stay busy. So it's definitely a family thing
for sure. Hey, man. With that, we pretty much went through everything that I wanted to go. I don't know. I'll definitely make sure to add, you know, your Instagram information. I know. Do you have like a defensive academy? Is that something that you want to mention?
I do. Yeah. So I started my own defensive academy. I think I started with December. This is something that I've thought about for a long time. I've seen people do camps, you know, and have sessions and stuff catered towards attacking players and midfield players and, you know, goalkeepers, but there's never really been anything for defenders to learn how to defend properly. And so, I prayed about it and, you know, I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to make an Instagram page and I'm just going to go for it. Yeah. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, my motivation and my inspiration was the kids, man, because in youth soccer, man, things can be really crazy sometimes, but I want to create an environment where for sure, regardless of what's happening, I can put the kids first and their needs and their growth of it. And I'm not saying that in youth soccer, that's not there, but there's plenty of places that do it properly. And then there's, you know, plenty of places that do it right, but then certain coaches who do their own thing and maybe it's not the most correct way. So just having the opportunity to control my own environment, to teach the way I to coach the kids was something that I could work, try to do it. And so we could show them and have kids who are interested in defending. No one really, realistically speaking, knows to defend. But for the few kids that are like, man, you know what? I'd love to learn how to close someone down and break them down 1v1. At least you have a space where you can go grow. And someone who's knowledgeable and who's physical for quite a while that you can learn from. And so I started that, and now it's been doing pretty good, man. I'm out, and that, you know, we've been doing a few camps, a couple of summer camps. We actually have one here July 12th, I believe, 12th, 14th, and 16th. And so between whenever I don't coach, I try to have sessions and camps and things to just kind of keep everybody involved and keep things fresh. So it's on Instagram, it's Last Line of Defense. at Last Line of Defense, LA. Well, we can put it in there.
Yeah, I'll make sure to put it
in Last Line of Defense. Yeah, man. You guys go check it out.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time anymore. So thank you again, Sip. Thanks for the time.
Yeah.
We hope that, you know, our listeners enjoyed it, especially like all the Houstonians that tend to listen to us. Kind of, you know, I have a lot of people that I talk to, and it's like, hey, I know this guy named Sip, and I'm like, hey, that's funny. I know him too. So, you know, I think I was talking to the guy named Denny Pena. Not giving him. He's like, I know this guy, and maybe a Cody Richardson was the other guy that.
We all played in high school together at Clearbrook.
Yeah. So, you know, again, thanks again for everything, man. And remember, keep crossing soccer borders.
For sure, man. Thanks for having me.